Hey everyone, and welcome to Gen Zero, Pokemon Movie Podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Doug.
And this week's a little bit different. If you're listening to this, it means that one of us was unable to make it this week, so we pre-made this episode in case of that event. So what did we watch instead of a movie this week, Doug?
Well, instead of a movie, we decided to take a short break into, well, the animated series. But don't worry, it's not the long-running standard animated series. In fact, we actually took some time and watched through the four episodes of Pokemon Origins.
Yes. It kind of reminds me of, seeing as how it's four parts and the animation style is kind of similar, it reminds me of KOF Another Day.
Yeah.
Four-part series.
It's actually not too far off, except a lot less punching, a lot more Pokemon.
I don't know, those Pokemon punch quite a bit.
He did use Mega Punch a lot.
Yeah. Well, let's just hop right into the first episode.
Well, Pokemon Origins is different from the animated series in that it is essentially an anime version of the actual video games.
Yes.
From Generation 1.
Exactly. It doesn't follow Ash, it follows Red.
And if we happen to mess that up at any point,
don't
hold it against us.
Yeah. Okay, let's hop right into Episode 1 then. It starts off with Professor Oak doing his classic explanation from the games. Also, he asks to be called the Professor of Pokemon. And behind him, it shows a bunch of different Pokemon, and this kind of reminds me of the actual episode in the actual anime where Bill's kind of explaining stuff, and it has that wall of Pokemon behind him. While he's explaining, an Eevee jumps into his arms, and it kind of reminds me, that part reminds me of, Blue, or Gary, because Gary had an Eevee, right?
Yeah, Gary had an Eevee to Ash's Pikachu.
Right. In Yellow.
Yeah. And in the actual anime.
Okay. And then after that, it goes into Gengar versus Nidoran, which I'm almost positive we talked about in the Latios and Latias movie, where it was Gengar versus Onix instead.
But you know what? It's following the opening for the original games.
Very precisely.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what this entire series is. It's like pure nostalgia rush.
It's fan service. It is super fan service, and it works. It's fan service that works. It knows who it's pandering to, and it panders well. And then we get a glimpse of Red's bedroom, where his mom's calling and telling him that Professor Oak wants him at the lab because he's finished his project. They don't really explain what his project is. Yet. This freaks Red out. He's obviously excited to get there, and he falls down the steps. And at this point, he meets up with Blue. We should mention that we are watching the English translated version, so it's going to be Red and Blue, not Red and Green. And some of the other little things will be switched around, obviously, because of that. And they end up, like, headbutting each other into the lab, pretty much. And Oak, at this point, explains and hands over his new invention, the Pokédex.
He explains to them that he created the Pokédex to record all of the known Pokémon in the world. And that was his dream to make this encyclopedia.
Yeah.
But, having taken so long to make this Pokédex, he's now too old to travel.
Exactly. And then he, obviously, he can't let them go out into the grass alone. So he gives them their starters. Well, he lets them choose their starters. And we get to see the table with the three Pokemon laid out on it, just like in the games.
What I like that they added was the giant flat screen right behind the table.
Yes.
That kind of showed what each of the Pokemon was.
You know, I wonder if there was some reference in here that you would get more out of if you played Fire Red and Leaf Green. Like, the updated stuff, there might be more nostalgia, or not nostalgia, more callback to that game, too.
It's possible, featuring the Red and, well, all the character designs are more based off of Fire Red and Leaf Green,
yeah,
as opposed to the original Red and Blue, but... Yeah.
I've never actually played those games. I would like to, but I just never got around to it.
We might have to go pick those up.
Yes.
Anyway.
Well, when you said the flat screen, it made me think of that. Blue lets Red decide first, and of course Red chooses Charmander because he explains that his father named him Red so that he would be passionate and have, like, a fire within him. So he obviously wanted to choose a fire type to go with that.
We never meet Red's dad either.
No.
So Blue, of course, chooses Squirtle.
Yeah.
But not because Squirtle is blue.
Yes.
It's because Squirtle is water.
I'm kind of curious as to what the Japanese part had that. Maybe he said, because Professor Oak actually asks, oh, hey, Blue, are you going to choose Squirtle because it matches your name? And he says, no, I'm just going to choose Squirtle because it's going to beat Ash. Or, fuck, Red.
We told you it was going to happen.
That's number one. But yeah, he chooses Squirtle because he knows it'll tight match well against Red. So I would like to see what Oak asks Green. Like, were you going to pick Bulbasaur? No, that would really, really suck against Charmander. And they don't battle. That's kind of one alteration they make in this.
Yes.
They don't battle first. Because Blue basically says, no, I'm not going to fight you. I want to fight actual trainers. And Red kind of comes back. It's like, you're fucking an amateur too, dude. And then we get the next scene of Red going through what I assume is Viridian Forest.
Somewhere. He's going through tall grass. He's trying to catch Pokemon.
Yes. Specifically a Pidgey at this point. And it's a really bad catch.
It's not a catch.
Yeah.
It flies away.
But then he does kind of get the hang of catching Pokemon. He catches a Rattata. He catches a Spearow, a Caterpie, and a Pidgey.
Finally.
Yes. And then he meets another trainer. I'm assuming this is his first trainer battle.
That's the first one they showed.
Yeah. Well, specifically because of the next thing he does.
Yeah.
He sees the trainer has a Nidoran, and he makes that one faint, and he tries to catch it. It doesn't work.
What I find interesting what they did, in the games, if I remember correctly, when you try throwing a Pokeball at a trained Pokemon, it says the trainer slapped the Pokeball away.
That's correct, from my memory, too.
In this, instead, if a Pokemon's already caught, a tiny, like, force field appears around the Pokemon and deflects the Pokeball away.
Yep, I was going to mention that, too. I guess it's better way to do it, because if the Pokemon are further away from the trainer, they can't, like, run up and get it. Get at that Pokeball before it hits him.
Poor Pokemon thieves. Make it so much harder.
Yeah. But he does eventually make it to Viridian City. He was on the road, but now he's here. And he meets up with Blue. And I'm wrong.
They didn't
make it to Viridian City yet. And Blue challenges him to a fight, because he wants to become the best Pokemon battler there is. And Red has a different goal. He wants to fill the Pokedex.
Yeah, he wants what Oak wanted.
Yeah, exactly. I really like that one character has one passion that you could go for in the games, and the other one has another passion that you can go for in the games. Because for most of the games, I was like Blue. I just wanted to beat the Elite Four, get Mewtwo, basically. But later on in life, I was like, oh, I want to fill the Pokedex. I want to try that.
It's kind of funny, because when I originally start playing, it would take me forever to get anywhere in the game, because every time I caught a new Pokemon, I'd have to just use that Pokemon until it evolved and it filled out my Pokédex. And then I'd trade it out, and I'd have to start training again, because I'd have an entire team of, like, level 5s.
God, no. That's... No. I had my team... Basically, I had a team that I caught as soon as I filled up my 6. That was my team, basically, for most of it.
But, yeah. Red versus Blue.
Yep. Red versus Blue. With a mysterious stranger watching who, I mean, come on, look at him.
Yeah.
He has slitty eyes, and that's all you need to know about him to know who he is. But, of course, this is Charmander versus Squirtle, and they're both leveled up enough that they know their elemental attacks, so it's not just Scratch versus Tackle.
They have Ember, they have Bubble.
Yep. And in that sense, Red gets rocked. He gets totally swept by this Squirtle.
And not just because of, you know, typing.
Right.
Like, Gary Squirtle knows what it's doing.
Ah, you said Gary.
Dang it! Okay, that's one for me.
Yep.
Blue Squirtle knows what it's doing.
Yes, and Blue knows how to train it. He knows how to, like, command it and get it to do what it wants. And Red is completely lost. He doesn't really know what he's doing. And kind of Blue says as much. He's like, you suck as a trainer. You really can't do this. Why don't you go back to Palatown? Red's really disheartened by this. He goes to a river and just kind of stares over the river. And I want to mention, I really like the way they did Bubble. Because it was actually bubbly and it kind of stuck to Charmander's body.
It was kind of like a foam.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Kind of like a shaving cream or something.
Yeah. It's better than just giant bubbles coming out.
And floating slowly at you. Yeah. But then the mysterious stranger steps out and gives some advice to...
to Red. Yes, he tries to explain type matching in a way for a little bit. And then he says, you know, you gotta have to have this connection between you and your Pokemon. And that's an overarching theme that kind of... It does pay off in the end. You gotta be friends with your Pokemon. You gotta get your friendship level higher. Oh, and taking this advice, Red goes, okay, I'm gonna take your advice right now. We're gonna go fight more Pokemon. And Brock, I'm just gonna fucking say it. Brock says, you're gonna make your Charmander fight after just getting wrecked. He has like 0 HP and you're gonna go off and battle more. You're an idiot. Go to the Pokemon Center in... Not Palatown. There's no Pokemon Center in Palatown. Go to the Pokemon Center in Pewter City and heal up your Pokemon and maybe you'll be good enough to fight the gym leaders. And this is where Red shows more ignorance. He doesn't know what gym leaders are. So Brock kind of explains there. But Red does take his advice. He goes to the Pokemon Center and there Oak explains how the PC works. He explains that once you have 6 Pokemon, if you catch another one, it goes right to the PC. And then his Pokemon are finished being healed by this point, and we get Joy. We get our first shot at Joy, and she does say the classic, we hope to see you again, which I always felt was a threat. It's a weird thing to say.
I hope your Pokemon get injured again.
Exactly. I hope you pass out and have to come here for more.
Don't press A that extra time.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Yes. I did that many times. Just keep pressing A through and have to heal your Pokemon twice.
Also, I'd like to bring up something since you mentioned Oak talking about the PC.
Yes.
Something you had mentioned to me that I didn't notice initially was throughout this entire little miniseries, they never once mentioned Bill.
Yeah.
Despite Bill, the fact they explained the PC.
Yeah. He does mention later on, jumping ahead a little bit, he does go to Cerulean City, obviously. He does battle Misty. He mentions fighting Team Rocket in Cerulean City. He doesn't mention the Nugget Bridge, which, I mean, that's kind of, who cares? But he definitely doesn't mention going to see Bill or mention the fact that Bill made the PC or anything like that, which really stuck in me. Because I like Bill. I think Bill's cool. He made the PC after all. But after he heals his Pokemon, he does go to the Pokemon Museum, which is in Pewter City, and he hears girls talking about Brock and how cool the gym leader is and stuff like that.
Brock is apparently a very ladies' man in this world, as opposed to the anime where...
Yeah, quite the opposite, yeah. Yeah. Well, he is a gym leader, and he stays a gym leader, so, you know, I'm sure they have a lot of... There's only 8 in Kanto, so they're probably pretty big celebrities.
Oh, yeah, that was another thing. Gym leaders and badges in this world actually have a big, like, significance, and yes. People look at those people with respect.
Yeah, if you have badges, it actually, it's a status symbol. Like, you are respected more because of that. I think that kind of happened in the original anime, but they were cheapened by the fact that Ash really never won badges. He always got them out of pity. But yeah, in this, I keep wanting to say game, in this version, they're definitely a status symbol. So, obviously, Ash. That's two for me. Red wants to fight the gym leader. So he goes to the gym, and there are bouncers in front of the gym who tell Red that he wouldn't make it in a million years against Brock, the gym leader. But Brock shows up, says, no, I invited this kid, let him in. And that's where Red gets the reveal of, oh shit, that guy that was talking to me in the woods was a gym leader. And there was a really cool scene here where Brock asks him if he understands about the companionship between Pokemon and their trainers. And Red says, no, I don't understand that yet, but that's why I'm here. I want to learn. And I thought that was a really cool response. Like, it was honest and...
So did Brock.
Yes, that's why he accepted his challenge. And obviously, Brock, that was one thing you mentioned to me the first time we viewed this, is that gym leaders are able to choose how many Pokemon they use based on their opponent, instead of having a set number of Pokemon just to use. And Brock chooses to use two, his Geodude and his Onix.
Despite the fact they actually show his
fuller... six, yeah. And the other nice thing we get to see for the first time is the HP screen that the gyms have.
Which actually look a lot like the HP screens in the games.
Yes, and they're super freaking cool. They would be really nice in real life Pokemon battles or whatever. But yeah, it's a nice touch. And again, Brock explains type matching because I think at this point Ash sends out his Nidoran, yes. And it slams Geodude, it wrecks him. So Brock sends out his Onix and uses Bide and explains what Bide does. Which is, you know, Brock's signature move, yeah. Red sends out his Spearow and his Rattata, which...
bad type matching yet again. But he's at least now learning to switch his Pokemon.
Exactly. And, you know, he's got a little Ash in him. We all know that.
He's a starter trainer.
Yes. Level 5 Rattata and level 6 Spearow. But then, after they get wrecked, he sends out Metapod, which has clearly evolved from a Caterpie, because it has String Shot, and not just Harden. It never actually uses Harden, it just uses the one String Shot before it gets wrecked. And we get a cool little animation of Onix breaking out of the String Shot, and it looks like it does nothing. And with that, he's down to one Pokemon.
It's Charmander.
Yep, it's a little Charmander. And at this point, Ash is getting... that's three! Red is getting really exhausted from the fight, and he realizes at this point that it's more than just a fight between two Pokemon. He's involved in it as well, and he starts to understand that. So he has Charmander use Scratch, and Onix use Tackle, and their speed is almost exactly the same.
Except
for the fact that Onix had a little bit of the String Shot from Metapod still stuck on him, which slowed him down just enough for Charmander to get the edge and win. That means, Ash, it's four. Jeez.
Man, I haven't passed episode one.
I know. Red gets his Boulder Badge. And TM34, which contains Bide, obviously. And this is another missing scene, I guess, or deleted scene I would hope to see. They never show how the TMs actually get used. And this is the only TM you even see him receiving.
Yeah, they mention he gets other TMs and HMs, but they never actually show him using them.
Right. I can imagine in this world, at least, you go to the Pokemon Center, you go to a PC, you put your Pokeball somewhere in the PC, and then you put the TM in a slot.
That's an interesting theory.
Or you could have, a portable version where you, hook it up to the Pokeball and you put the TM in the slot and it teaches it that way.
Kind of like a Taibo video. You just stick it into the PC and let the video play and it shows them using the move.
Yes,
the
exactly.
The Pokemon has to do the exercise.
Oh, or like the Matrix, the first Matrix, where Neo knows Kung Fu. After that, we get a shot of Oak's assistant asking Professor Oak why he chose Red. And he says, well, Red has a lot of potential. Blue's good too, but he's too arrogant. And we need someone to humble him, basically. And that's pretty much the end of that episode. And the nice thing about these episodes, at the very end, we have a tally of Red's... just like in the games, when you save your game, you get to see how many badges you have, how many Pokemon are in your Pokedex, and how much time you spent. And how much... What's Red's stats at the end of episode 1?
At the end of episode 1, he has one badge, his Boulder Badge.
Right.
He has a Pokedex entry of 10.
Okay.
And he has spent an hour 24 minutes to get where he is.
Okay. And then we'll move right on to episode 2.
Now, the thing is, also between episodes, he does a little off-screen grinding.
Yes.
And such.
He tries to recap it at the very beginning of the episode, because if all four episodes go through the entire game.
Correct.
So, Obviously, if they tried to make that in an anime, it would take way longer than 4 episodes. So they kind of condense a whole bunch in the beginning of each episode. So what does he have when he comes back?
When he comes back?
In episode 2.
He still has... he has 3 badges now.
Right.
Having defeated, you know, Misty and Lieutenant Surge.
Yep.
42 Pokemon in his Pokedex. And he is now up to 8 hours and 22 minutes.
So 7 hours off screen.
Yeah.
And in that 7 hours, he buys a Magikarp for 500 Pokebucks.
He bought that Magikarp.
Yep. He's the only one. He beat a super nerd who gave him a fossil. He found and beat Team Rocket in Cerulean City, which probably gave him TM Gig. He beat Misty. His Charmander evolved into a Charmeleon. He got an old rod from a fisherman. He cured the SSN's captain of seasickness and gave him HM1.
Got up his back counterclockwise.
Yes, exactly. He beat Lieutenant Surge. He got his bike voucher. And he's now headed to Lavender Town, and that's where we catch up with him. Basically, when the episode actually starts after the recap, he's in the Pokemon Center, and people are talking about the Pokemon Tower that's in Lavender Town, where everyone goes to mourn their dead Pokemon. Which always was, I mean, it's obviously a subject of creepypasta all the time.
Yeah.
Because it's a creepy thing. I mean, even when you're a little kid.
It's death.
Having a giant graveyard tower in a video game is kind of creepy. So,
if I had a giant graveyard tower in real life, it'd be creepy.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes. So, yeah, he overhears 2 people talking about the Pokemon Tower. So he kind of talks to them. Like you do when you're in a Pokemon Center, you talk to every single person.
Yeah, you get all the information. Sometimes they offer you items, sometimes they offer you O-Powers.
Yes, well... Very late on, in Gen 6, they offer you O-Powers. Oh, God, that guy was weird. Anyway. So, yeah, he talks to a man and a lady about the Pokemon Tower. They basically say, there's a ghost in there. It's really creepy. And then they try to say, oh, you don't believe in ghosts? Because he mentions that he's skeptical about it. But what about that hand on your shoulder? And he freaks out and turns around. And when he turns back, those 2 people are gone. They just ran out of Pokemon Center. they didn't want to talk to him anymore.
They could have been ghosts. The nurse didn't seem to, you know, acknowledge their existence.
Yeah. Speaking of the nurse, after Ash... That's 5! After Red heals his Pokemon, the nurse Joy Listown, who is quite different looking.
Yeah.
She doesn't look at all like the nurse Joy we saw before, which is a nice thing. She mentions the Pokemon House, which is a house for abandoned Pokemon, she doesn't say that it's a house for abandoned Pokemon. She just tells him, go to this Pokemon House. Go there. Because when he gets there, the first thing he says when he sees someone is, what's this place all about? I just walked in your door, and I don't know what's here, so tell me what this place is all about. So the lady that he interrogates, basically, tells him, oh yeah, this is a place for abandoned Pokemon. We... recover Pokemon that were hurt or that were just left by the wayside, and we heal them up. And then she mentions that the founder of this place was Mr. Fuji. She doesn't really get more into Mr. Fuji yet. But I want to mention something that I learned from my Japanese classes. There is Mount Fuji, obviously, in Japan.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about that is the honorific... for an adult would be san, so it'd be Fuji-san in Japanese, and the word for mountain is san. So if you, Mount Fuji and Mr. Fuji are both Fuji-san in Japanese.
That is kind of interesting.
Japanese trivia for you. And then Red meets Cubone, who was attacked by Team Rocket and now has a very standoffish nature, because during the attack by Team Rocket, and Marowak, his mother, assumedly, which screws up the whole Pokedex entry, but we'll roll with it. His mother dies trying to save him. And she succeeds in saving him. Because Fuji finds him, and cares for him, takes him to the house, and now that Cubone only likes Mr. Fiji. He's kind of standoffish for everyone else. And this is where the lady who Ash... That's six. The lady who Red was talking to mentions that Mr. Fuji went to the Pokemon Tower, but after that, Team Rocket kind of took over the Pokemon Tower and set it up as the base and won't let anyone above, like, floor 5, I think it is. So he's stuck up there.
Then a whole bunch of the townspeople start freaking out and saying how they should try to get him back.
Right.
But they were all unable to defeat Team Rocket themselves.
Yes.
But I find it strange that all of them kept asking and encouraging, you know, this random kid to go to the Pokemon Tower.
Mm-hmm.
When the entire town knew that Team Rocket had invaded the tower.
Yeah. Well, actually, when Red volunteers, everyone's kind of like, you? A kid? And then he shows his badges and everyone's like, oh shit, he has 3 badges? Alright, fine. Yeah, go for it. And Blue overhears this, because he's eavesdropping through the door. He goes, fuck, I got 3 badges, I can take them on, and then I'll be the hero. Which is kind of weird, because I guess if he wants to beat everyone else, he might as well get the XP from Team Rocket while he's here.
I was thinking just trying to go for the glory.
Yeah. But, yeah. Red goes to the Pokemon Tower to beat up Team Rocket. There's one thing about the Pokemon Tower I want to mention, because I know in the games a lot of people make the joke that the gravestones are on the floor, so where are the Pokemon? They must be buried in the floorboards. And my assumption was always that they're just markers. They're not actually buried there. But in the anime, you actually see above-floor coffins where the Pokemon could be stored, with a headstone on top. So I thought that was a nice little touch to kind of explain.
That makes it kind of even creepier.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Riding Pokemon in your house? Yeah, that's weird. But at least it's not Pokemon in the floorboards.
Also, Team Rocket invaded the Pokemon Tower, kicked everyone out, and is keeping them from coming in. And they've actually shown, like, throwing people out the front door. But yes. They don't actually lock the front door.
No, they leave it. I don't think that has a door. The entrance. Because why would it?
No, that's true.
But yeah. They've thrown people out, but they never posted sentries at the front. So they really don't care about anything above or below the, like, 5th floor. And I don't know why they're there in the first place.
Because their hideout base up 5th floor, you know, it consists of a lamp.
Yeah, and 3 dudes. Yeah, what the fuck were they thinking? This doesn't make any sense. Even in Pokemon world... Where they can't try to steal Pokemon here. They're all dead.
You could if they really wanted a dead Pokemon.
Well, I guess technically in the game there are ghost Pokemon they randomly encounter.
And they do have the Silph Scope.
The Silph Scope, yes. They do have the Silph Scope. Yeah. So maybe they're just hunting ghost Pokemon. Which is the other thing. They all keep talking about this ghost and everyone's scared of this ghost. But there are ghost Pokemon, and I don't get the disconnect. I mean, it is a unknown kind of ghost Pokemon that they can't recognize.
The thing is, they've encountered ghosts before.
Right. Yeah. I guess that this isn't a ghost they understand, maybe. At this point, Blue is way ahead of Red. He's on the 5th floor, and the fabled ghost... actually comes at him and scares the ever-loving crap out of him. Which is rightfully so, because even if I knew what ghost Pokemon were when I saw that thing, I'd be freaked out. And he runs down the stairs and slams headlong into Red. And hugs him for a little bit, which is kind of weird. Like, they actually embrace for a good long while. And Blue's like, oh, we gotta get out of here. Let's just run, get away from this thing. But Red's like, nah. I'm gonna fight this thing. I know what I'm doing. So he throws out Charmeleon and
proceeds to use Slash.
Yes. To no avail, obviously, because he's still learning.
It shows that he might be a little bit of Ash every so often.
Yes, exactly. And at this point, Cubone escapes from his cage in the Pokemon house because he has some kind of sixth sense about this ghost.
After that, Blue goes up the stairs since the ghost is preoccupied with Red.
Right.
And the very first thing he encounters coming to the next floor is a Team Rocket grunt.
Right. Who's on his way down to hear the commotion. He takes his opportunity.
Beats the crap out of him, apparently, all off screen.
Yes, and robs him of the self-scope. And gives it to Red because he's fighting the ghost. And and using the self-scope, Red realizes that the ghost is actually the ghost of a Marowak that died saving Cubone. Cubone, in turn, shows up and hugs the ghost Marowak. And it kind of puts the spirit at rest, so to speak. At this point, Blue kind of goes, okay, you take over from here. I did what I had to do. I'm out. So Red goes further up, meets the other two Team Rocket grunts out of there, fights one of them, who has a coffin, and he fights with his Jolteon, which goes to show that this Red knows what he's doing. He picked Jolteon for his evolution, so at least he's good there.
You're just happy to pick Vaporeon.
Oh, yes. Well, Jolteon's the only proper choice in this game.
Also, three Rocket grunts, and they had a coffin.
Yes, they had a coffin. Well, maybe he beat the other two. I know. Maybe Blue beat the other two. Because he definitely beat one of them, at least. Cubone helps, because coughing uses smoke screen, so Cubone helps get rid of it. And eventually, Jolteon obviously takes out the coughing easily. Then they find Mr. Fuji, and Fuji thanks Red and takes him back to his house, where he gives Red a Poké Flute. And something that wasn't in either the first gen or Fire Red. What does he give him?
He gives him a tiny box with two little stones in them.
Yes. Not evolution stones.
No, not evolution stones. Perfectly round stones with, what do you think? Like, kind of like a DNA leaf shape kind of pattern in the center?
Yeah, kind of like a double helix almost.
Which.
If you've played Gen 6, you know what they are.
Yeah. Mind you, these cartoons, yeah.
The anime.
This series was made as a promotion for Gen 6 coming out.
Exactly, right.
So it gives you a pretty good idea of what these stones will do.
Uh-huh. And then as Red's leaving town, Blue is up in a tree, just waiting for him.
It's not creepy.
No, God, no. It's not obsessed at all. And he taunts Red about something. I don't remember what he exactly taunts him about, but Red definitely comes back with you're the one that wanted to run out of there from the ghost. And Blue kind of blows him off there. And that's the end of episode 2. That's where we leave it off. And after that, where's Red's standings here?
Well, after all that time, he's now at 11 hours and 22 minutes.
Right.
He still has 3 badges.
Of course.
And a Pokedex count of 45.
Okay. And as we go into episode 3, what are his stats?
He is now up to 5 badges.
Okay.
65 in his Pokedex, mm-hmm. And 15 hours and 34 minutes.
And in those 4 hours, he has obviously beaten Erica. That's one of the badges. He went to the game corner and beat Team Rocket there, including Giovanni. He caught himself a Snorlax. He got the Super Rod, which he skipped a rod.
You need the good rod.
Yeah. He beat Koga for his 5th badge. Charmeleon finally evolves into Charizard. And he went to Saffron City and met a nice lady who ran directly into him as she was being chased by Team Rocket. Blue's there as well, and they both rescue her. They get her away from Team Rocket and take her into the woods, which she might be worse off there, who knows. But she tells them that she was the secretary for the president of the Sylph Company, who, obviously, they made the Sylph Scope, and the Sylph Company is now being overrun by Team Rocket because the Sylph Company is now working on the Master Ball. And obviously, Who wouldn't want the Master Ball? So Giovanni's there trying to perfect it because it's only a prototype at this point. And they're running experiments on Pokemon to figure out how to catch them without fail, I guess. And Red wants Blue to take the Secretary Lady to Celadon City, which is right next door, and go to the police there to, you know, have them come to the stealth company to round up Team Rocket. Blue wants nothing to do with this. He says, "No, I'm out of here. Smell you later." And Red's like, "No, what the hell, man? You want to be the best. You can't run away from this kind of crap."
He physically grabs Blue and essentially forces him to do
what he wants. So, obviously, Blue agrees. Like, "All right, fine. We'll go. But what are you going to do if it's just me and this lady going to the police?" And what does he say he wants to do?
He's going to go. He's going to take down Team Rocket. He's going straight in.
Yep. By himself, obviously. One 10-year-old versus an entire gang.
He refused to wait for the police because the Pokemon inside would continue suffering while they waited.
Yep. And to his credit, it works. He does get into the Sylph Company. He releases all the Pokemon. And we should mention, these aren't trainers Pokemon. These are wild Pokemon. So he just releases all these wild Pokemon out into the streets of Saffron City. He meets a scientist who gives him Lapras. And he meets Giovanni for the second time. And Giovanni's like, "All right, fine. You're here. Obviously, police are on their way. We're gonna leave. We're out of here." But Red's like, no, we're fighting. I'm not going to let you leave." And that was a mistake. Because this is the second time on screen, at least, that we see Red get his ass handed to him.
Like, badly.
Yeah. He sends out Charizard, and Giovanni sends out his Nidoqueen. And Nidoqueen, like, one-shots this Charizard.
Nidoqueen knows Surf.
Yes. And it plows Charizard through a wall. Like, it ruins the top of Sylph Co., blowing a hole not only through an interior wall, but also blowing out the window.
To be fair, that was good, because that's how they left.
Exactly. Helicopter descends, Giovanni gets on it, and that's the last he sees of that for a while.
There's some taunting, you know, the standard villain leaving.
Yeah, Giovanni mentions that Pokemon are only useful for business, and he repeats this phrase a lot in the next couple of scenes.
Yeah, you can understand what he means, but it's a weird... Maybe it's just a translation thing.
Yeah, maybe. Because, he says they are tools for business. Business, business, business. I'm a busy, busy businessman. Pokemon are business.
Unikitty Giovanni.
Exactly. But then we get another short roundup of what Ash... At 7, Red has been up to. He beat Sabrina. He beat the Karate Master and got himself a Hitmonlee. He went to Cinnabar Island, which has the Pokemon Mansion on it. And he read a diary about the mysterious Mew and the experiments done on the island. He beats up Blaine. And then he goes back to Viridian City. And before he gets there, he finds out that the gym leader of Viridian City's back. Who tells him this? Well, who does he overhear this from?
He's kind of stalking around, what are they calling the game? Couples?
Yeah, Pokemon Couple.
Pokemon Couple? Like, the two that are wearing the same clothes as each other? Throughout this entire series, you see a lot of, like, the standard trainers in the background that you encounter in games, like swimmers and veterans and that.
Yeah, hikers. Actually, I don't think there are any hikers.
No, I don't think there were.
Fat guys with the big old bushy beards. Man, that sucks. I like the hikers. The hikers are cool.
But yeah, they're just looking at this poster of gym leaders, and they're talking about how the Viridian City gym leader is back.
Yep.
And how he's the toughest one, and he uses Earth-type.
Ground-type.
Ground-type.
There's no Earth-type.
Same thing.
Yeah. But yeah, so Red has this foreknowledge of, okay, this guy uses Ground-types, this guy's really strong, I'm going to go kick his ass, get myself into the Pokemon League. And he gets there, and he sees Blue just chilling, because he didn't just walk out, because the Viridian City gym leader mentions that it was yesterday that Blue fought him.
Once again, I think Blue is kind of just, you know...
He definitely likes to antagonize Red, if nothing else.
That's what they did in the games.
Exactly. And Blue shows off that he has 8 badges, which is pretty fucked up because his anime counterpart had 10 at this point, and and he didn't have the Ridian badge because he got his ass kicked by Mewtwo. So Gary is better than Blue by badge numbers. I gotta go back and see what those 2 badges were. So weird. Or 3, I should say. But yes, this obviously prompts Red to immediately run into the Ridian gym to get it. And you noticed that just like in the games, there is a big ledge in front of the Ridian gym.
Yeah, and it's built higher up than the rest of the town. It's
very, very nice detail. But yeah, he gets in there and obviously he realizes that Giovanni is the gym leader. And Giovanni sees him and goes, "Oh, fucking you again." And Red keeps yelling at him, you know, "You want to use these Pokemon for business, you're not a real gym leader," and all that stuff. And this whole time, his passion is really pissing off Giovanni. It's like, this kid is annoying the hell out of me. And he doesn't understand it. He's like, "Why am I getting so worked up over this little twerp?" So, because of this, instead of using his standard 6, he uses 2. And I think this is the first time we get to see a different ball type.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't remember seeing it besides the preview of the Master Ball we saw.
Right.
Like, this is the first time anyone's actually used a different type of Pokeball.
Right. Because he has his standard 6 in regular Pokeballs, but his 2 are in Ultra Balls.
It's not fair. He has 8 Pokemon out at one time.
Yeah. So he has a Rhyhorn. So he has a Rhyhorn that he sends out first, and Red, knowing what he's up against, sends out a grass type to go against this. But it doesn't help.
Yeah. Rhyhorn one-shots Victory Bell with Horn Drill.
Yep. It's almost as bad as seeing that Arbok getting cut in half in the manga.
Uh-huh.
Because you see, Rhyhorn hits Victory Bell, and you know Rhyhorn has a horn at the end of its nose, and when Rhyhorn hits the Victory Bell, that horn is obviously inside that Victory Bell. It's really gruesome looking. But then, Red, again, knowing his types, sends out Kabutops, because that is water type.
Another good choice.
Unfortunately, Rhyhorn has Thunderbolt.
And 2 shots his Kabutops.
Yep. And then he sends out his Snorlax, which he caught.
And once again, Horn Drilled.
Yep.
One shot.
And then
he
sends out Jolteon. Which Giovanni gets really mad at this point. He's like, "Oh, I'm so disappointed in you. You were doing so well." And he's like, "Wait, why the hell am I disappointed in this kid?" But to be fair, Red had an idea. He had double kick on his Jolteon. So fighting type against ground, not bad. But it doesn't work.
And then, you know, Rhyhorn one-shots Jolteon with Thunderbolt?
Right. So it must be a really high-level Rhyhorn with a really low-level Jolteon or something, because one-shotting a Jolteon with an electric attack when your Pokemon has shitty special and not stab, that's...
Maybe it was hacked. A lucky critical?
Maybe. Yeah, we... That's something they should have mentioned in the
critical attacks?
Yeah, in the anime. Critical hits. So next he sends out Hitmonlee, which is another good one. And they use a whole bunch of attacks. This isn't just a one-shot thing. Including High Jump Kick, which is one of my favorite attacks because I love watching it miss. Almost one-shots yourself if you miss. But it ends up in a double KO. And now this means... Obviously, Giovanni has 1 Pokemon left, and if you counted right, you know that there's only 1 Pokemon Red can use now. And what's that one?
It's the only one he's always had in his party. It's his Charizard.
Yep. You gotta keep the starters, man. If you put your starter in the bank, you're playing Pokemon wrong. You play Pokemon wrong, Doug.
I love my Bulbasaur.
Bulbasaur's good. You should evolve it, though. But, yeah, Giovanni uses Rhydon. And you brought up a nice point. We would both love to see Giovanni with a Rhyperior.
It would be disgusting.
He would be badass with a Rhyperior. And at this point, Giovanni's kind of really freaking out because Red is making all these motions that he recognizes, and he's kind of he's finally piecing together that he's really mad at Red because he reminds him so much of his younger self and how he used to act. And he's kind of getting this crisis of conscience where it's like, where did I go wrong? Why did I turn to business when I was all about Pokemon? And the first thing these two Pokemon do when they come out of their Pokeballs is Charizard uses Mega Punch, and I don't know exactly what Rhyhorn also uses Mega Punch.
Also Mega Punch.
Okay. And they do the stereotypical anime cross counter, which was really cool. So emblematic of every anime where two enemies punch, you get a cross counter.
It's a pretty good fight, actually.
Yeah, I wish the actual anime had fights like this. Or at least the movies, please. Put in fights like that. I mean, the Rayquaza versus Deoxys fight is pretty cool.
We'll get to that eventually.
But, yeah, we'll get to that. Or we may have already gotten to it, depending on when this goes up. But either way, it's a nice fight, and it's really close. Charizard's really low on health. They should have played the beeping sound, but that's okay. And Rhydon is still in the yellow, I think, at this point. But not...
He's far from not injured.
He's not going down just yet. But Red, with quick thinking, has Charizard use Seismic Toss. Which, given the fact that Charizard's pretty high level, and Seismic Toss does your level in damage, it's a pretty good move.
It's a pretty big crater.
Yes, it definitely ruins Rhydon.
Featuring, it's also not like Seismic Toss in the anime where, you know, it's pick them up and fly around and then drop them. This is just kind of like a judo flip Seismic Toss.
It's a German suplex, basically.
Yeah, so he just kind of plants him in the ground.
Yeah, it's rough. He doesn't turn him into a black ball and throw him up in the air and he comes back down. So it's not as close to the games as they say. Red won. Fair and square. And Giovanni recognizes this and goes, here, have your...
Earth Badge.
Yeah, see, okay. It's a leaf. And Red refuses. He goes, I don't want a gym badge from the leader of Team Rocket, you scumbag. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the gist. And Giovanni goes, okay, I'm going to disband Team Rocket then. And...
He orders his grunts to call all the other grunts and tell them, we're done.
Yeah.
Pack up, go home.
Yeah. God, laying off that many people just for this kid is pretty fucked up. The economy's going to suffer because of this. I just know it.
It's a criminal organization.
Shh. But still, poor guys. Some of those grunts had families, damn it. But, yeah. So, Red does take the badge because he's not the leader of Team Rocket, so... Giovanni's going to go live in a cave, and Red's going to go to the Victory Road. And that's where we end this episode. So where's Red standing now?
Red finally has all 8 of his badges.
Correct.
He has Pokedex total of 99.
Not bad.
And he has 21 hours and 18 minutes under his belt.
Nice. Now before we go any further, I forget. In the games, is your Pokedex... entry thing based on seen for the saved, or is it based on caught? I can't remember.
It is based on caught.
Okay.
Caught or evolved, just like any of the others.
Okay. Because I always get confused.
Seen will show up, but not as your total count.
Okay, cool. Okay, so when we come back to Red, what's he at? Obviously, he still has 8 badges.
Yeah, that's not going to change from here on out.
Right.
Well, he's caught 14 Pokemon, so he has 113 now.
Okay.
And he's now at 23 hours and 2 minutes.
Okay. How many hours has passed?
How many hours?
Yeah.
Oh, an hour 44. An hour and 44 minutes have passed since his last save.
Okay. And during that, he made it through Victory Road, he got to the Indigo Plateau, and he beat the Elite Four. So
pretty impressive for that quickly.
Yeah.
I got lost in Victory Road so many times my first playthrough.
Strength puzzles? Oh, having to save to get Moltres. Yeah, Moltres. Ugh, Moltres. Ugh. Mm-hmm. Fucking Articuno and Zapdos, where it's at. Anyway. Yeah, he beat the Elite Four, and when we come back to him, he is walking into the... Actually, he's beating Lance. He had just beat Lance. And Lance says, okay, you beat us, but you still gotta beat the champ.
Yeah. Like, you're the champ. Or at least you would be, you know, that whole switcheroo.
Yeah. It's not like Lance hurt us enough. There's three goddamn Dragonites.
There were no dragon Pokemon in the first gen. What do you want? Yeah. An Aerodactyl, for God's sakes.
Yeah, goddamn it. So, he walks into the champ's arena, and he sees Blue there, just chilling. And he kind of is like, oh god, not you again. And they kind of skip most of the fights, which I kind of wish this whole thing would have been one, like, just the red and blue fight, and then like, they had done a next episode for what happens afterwards. Because I would have liked to see this be more intense. But we get to see all of their Pokemon, so we're going to do a rundown. You do blue, and I'll do red. So, what's the first one?
Blue's first Pokemon sent out is Pidgeot.
And red uses Jolteon.
It's good type matching.
Yeah, he wrecks him.
Alakazam.
I have Kadabro. Why do I have Kadabro?
Who's Kadabro?
I don't know.
Is it Kadabra?
Maybe I wrote down Kadabro. Okay. So, yeah, he has Alakazam versus Red Scyther.
Or maybe it was Kadabra.
He had two spoons, so.
Then Blue throws out a Rhydon, which Ash's bow burst. Damn it! That's two for me.
Ah.
You're still losing.
Yes. Red throws out his Lapras. So, water type versus ground type. Not bad.
Blue throws out his Arcanine, which he actually has in the games.
Yep, and Red keeps his Lapras.
Next one is Exeggutor from Blue.
Yep, and Red uses Dotrio to beat it.
I should have to check the games. I'm pretty sure this is fairly close
to Blue's team. Yeah.
In the games. And after Exeggutor, finally is Blue's last Pokemon, his Blastoise.
Yep, where Red uses a Persian and gets wrecked. Twice, because he sends out a Persian and a Jolteon, and they both get schooled.
And the thing is, after that, according to the HP monitors, Blastoise still had no damage after those two fights.
He used a Hyper Potion. and then, obviously, Red only has one Pokemon left, his Charizard, so he sends that out. And the first thing he tries to do is he tries to hit it with a Mega Punch. Doesn't work so much, and he gets hit with a Hydro Pump. So he, in turn, uses his elemental attacks on a Blastoise with Fire Spin and Fire Blast. And it works. He ruins that Blastoise.
And they kind of describe it as him wearing it down.
Yeah.
Because of the Fire Spin.
Right.
But, yeah.
Who uses Fire Spin?
It used to be better.
Yeah. But, yeah. That's that fight. Red beats Blue, and Blue kind of sits back on the steps and is like, oh, that was quick. I only was the champ for like an hour and a half.
Blue does his little lament of, you know, can't believe it's over already, his exactly. Championship.
And Oak shows up, because as soon as he heard that Blue had won, he was like, okay, well, I gotta get to the Pokemon League.
Much to his surprise, by the time he had gotten there, Blue had already lost.
Yep, to Red. So, he's like, okay, well, then Red, you come with me, we'll go to the Hall of Fame, and we'll register your Pokemon.
Oh, that would suck. I wonder if Oak needs to be there to register the Pokemon in the Hall of Fame.
Right, and Blue never got his chance?
Yeah.
That would suck. I think...
Yeah, that doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, in all fairness, I think if that was the case, Oak would have taken them both, registered Blue first, and then registered Red right afterwards, because it's only fair. So, after this, obviously, the game's over, and after the game's over, you have to save. So, what's the save file at this time?
113 Pokédex.
Right.
Hasn't changed. Is that 24 hours and 31 minutes?
Okay.
I'd also like to add, it was a really cool scene of how they did the Pokémon Hall of Fame.
Right.
Like, you put your Pokéball on a little stand like you do in the later games.
Yeah.
And it just starts show like materializing picture of all of your Pokemon and the final you, much yeah. like they do in the current games.
Exactly. It's just like that. It's really cool. And
there's a little gallery all around you of previous champs.
I would like to see that in the games. Like the gallery of other champions that you could see.
Now, would it be like your past parties you've beaten the Elite Four with, or would you...
I would like to have some lore there, like other actual Pokemon trainers that came before you, or...
You know what would be interesting?
Online connectivity.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the other option.
See all of your friends champion?
Exactly. What their teams were, and you can kind of take ideas from that.
That would be pretty awesome.
That would be awesome, too.
Get on, Nintendo.
Yes. So, after he beat the Elite Four, what's left to do?
Finish the Pokédex, duh.
Exactly. So we get a little montage of him collecting Pokémon he's missed somehow, including a Tentacool. fuck to you use Surf once and not use a and not find a Tentacool.
Lots of Repel.
Yeah, I can't blame him there. At least it wasn't Hoenn. He's in the Safari Zone trying to decide between throwing bait and throwing a rock.
And the chance he runs away.
Yeah, the chance he's trying to catch runs away. Which I like because in later games it's throwing mud instead.
Aww.
So, yeah, I like that it's still a rock in the anime. He mentions catching Articuno, Zapdos, and Moltres in that order, which is nice. And he catches them all in Ultra Balls. So Oh, right. He also uses a... Forgot to write this down somewhere. He catches an Arbok in a Great Ball, too.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And it showed the wobble, and then the three stars come out of the top of the Pokeball, which or the Great Ball, which is really a nice touch. But then he goes back to Oak's Lab because he has all Pokemon, all 149 of them.
Even just hearing it said like that.
It feels so wrong. But Oak's not at the lab. He went to... see the blue because a blue. He went to go see blue because apparently blue got injured at some point, somehow. When red gets there, blue explains that he was fighting this mysterious Pokemon that he's never seen before, and his Blastoise fell on him, which goddamn that had to hurt. Oh. So red's like, okay, well. I have all the Pokemon, so it has to be in here. You look through this, and we'll find out which one it was. And so Blue explains what moves to use. To use what? Barrier, Swift, and...
Confusion.
Confusion. So, obviously, it had to be a Psychic-type Pokemon. So Oak goes through the Pokedex looking through Psychic-type Pokemon, including a Alakazam... And an Exeggutor, and obviously Blue would have known if it was one of those, because he had them in his team. And then we get a little clip of Mount Fuji. Not Mount Fuji, Mr. Fuji.
Yeah, like you said, it's still Mount Fuji.
I haven't written down Mr. Fuji, so I'm not an idiot. Anyway, we get a little clip of Mr. Fuji finding out that Blue went to the Cerulean Cave and got beat by this mysterious psychic Pokemon. And he's kind of like, this ain't good. And Red's like, all right, well, if you're laid up in bed with all these bandages around you, I'm going to go try to catch it. Because I got to fill up my Pokedex, and obviously this is a Pokemon, so that's not in the Dex, so I got to get number 150. At this point, they go back to Oak's lab. And Oak asks about the mysterious spheres, the orbs that Mr. Fuji gave to him. And he says that these spheres have some kind of link between them two. They have some kind of energy between them. And that the bigger one has some kind of special link with Charizard. So you should probably let Charizard hold on to this. And I've never known exactly how Pokemon hold items...
Like some items make sense, like scarves and like cosmetic items.
Right.
But then you have, yeah, there's some things like, how are you holding that? What are you doing with that?
According to this, they eat it, I guess, because it's in his chest when it glows. So,
You just gotta pick it out every time it comes back out.
Yeah. For some reason, I always imagine berries being on top of their head.
That's kind of adorable.
I have no idea where I got that idea from, but I always imagine them holding it on their head, so maybe that's where they do it. But then Red also, while they're in the lab, remembers the diary about Mew and Mewtwo, how no one could contain Mewtwo, and how it was destructive. So he's like, that must be it. It must be Mewtwo. And he's right. Yeah. It is. And after he tells Professor Oak that about Mewtwo, Oak explains that it was Dr. Fuji who did these experiments and made Mewtwo, basically. So now we have a name for Pokemon the first movie, the scientists, or at least one of them. That Tenma-looking motherfucker was apparently Dr. Fuji.
Yeah, but Dr. Fuji was still alive.
In
at least I think Ash met Fuji. It's been a long time since I watched season one.
Yeah, I have no idea. So Red goes to Cerulean City, goes to the cave. There's no one there to block his path because he's obviously beat the Elite Four. And we don't really see much of Cerulean Cave. He just kind of Lapras's it through it a little bit. So, no fighting Golbats and Chanseys, I think, that were in there.
He approaches a tiny island in the middle of a big lake.
Which is exactly how it is in the game. And it's in a corner.
There's a strange creature at the far end of the island facing away from him.
Yep.
That quickly glances over shoulders, turns around, leaps towards him, and lets out a huge roar.
Yes. Very nice cry from Mewtwo. And what's the first Pokemon he sends out after it?
He sends out his Gengar.
Yes. Which is great, because Ghost-type versus Psychic.
Except Gen 1 Ghosts are poison, so...
Yes.
They're effective against Psychic, but they're all super weak against Psychic.
Yep. And he does some damage. He beats him up. He instantly gets wrecked. I'm sorry. Then Articuno comes out. Articuno comes out and uses Blizzard, I would assume. And,
he kind of freezes over a bit.
Yes, but he...
immediately uses Recover.
Yes. Fucking Recover on Mewtwo! And then he wrecks Articuno. So he used two out of his six Pokemon, and apparently he realizes, well, legendaries can't even hold up to this thing. So he actually says legendary Pokemon can't stand against this thing. So gotta use his ringer, his ace in the hole. He throws out Charizard. That doesn't work.
No.
He uses, Slash, and gets reflected.
Yeah, Mewtwo keeps using Barrier, essentially, to protect himself. Whatever does... managed to get through.
Yes.
He uses Recover to heal. And then he just keeps using Confusion and Swift.
Yep. And eventually knocks both Charizard and Red into the lake that's surrounding the island. And at this point, Red's kind of like, we can't freaking beat this guy. He's way too strong. And he looks further down into the lake where Charizard's sinking. And realizes Charizard's not giving up. And if he's not giving up, I'm not giving up. We're best friends. We're going to get through this together. And that's when the stones start to react. The little one in his pocket and the bigger one inside Charizard's chest start to react. And this is where we get our first look at Mega Evolution, where Charizard turns into Mega Charizard X, specifically. Because it's the cooler looking one.
It is. Let's face it.
Black and blue. It's got blue flames coming out. And they both come out of the water. And Charizard uses Fire Blast. And now the Fire Blast is blue instead of red.
And it spins.
Yeah, it's pretty badass.
Mind you, this catches Mewtwo completely off guard. He assumed he killed them.
Yeah, he assumed he won. So, after that... Red is like, okay, well, I've weakened it sufficiently enough. Time to throw an Ultra Ball at the thing that has the lowest catch rate in existence. And...
just kind of bounces off his head.
Yeah.
Before he goes in it.
Yeah, he kind of looks at it like, what the hell was that thing? And he gets stuck in it. And then he breaks out. Which, this I thought was really cool. Because you actually kind of see the ball explode.
Yeah.
So it kind of explains why you don't get your ball back when you can't catch a Pokemon. It actually gets destroyed. with the willpower of the Pokemon trying to escape. But then he has Charizard X, Mega Charizard X use Swift, and Mewtwo should know better, because he knows Swift, and he tries to run away. And what's the one thing that's good about Swift?
It has 100% hit rate.
Yes.
It always hits. No,
yeah, it has more than 100% hit rate. Yeah, it doesn't hits. Miss. That's why you use Swift on a double teamer. And this weakens... No, he uses Mega Punch after that, which really fucks up Mewtwo. He should use False Swipe. But then he throws the Ultra Ball and finally catches Mewtwo. After he catches him, we get a nice little scene of everyone at Oak's house, I would assume, eating dinner. And at this point, the Pokedex is full, all 150. And then Red realizes, wait, Mewtwo was cloned from Mew. That means Mew's still out there.
There's more Pokemon.
Yeah, I gotta catch a Mew. I gotta go to the truck near SSN, use strength, and catch me a Mew. And who shows up?
Well, if he had been paying attention, he would have seen right outside the window, Mew floats by.
Yeah.
He kind of just looks at it through the window like, what you talking about?
Yeah, he's like, you talking about me, motherfucker? And that's where it ends. We get a nice little credit scene where everything's getting recapped in a small thing. Small little window.
So Red has completed his adventure and caught all 150 Pokemon, right. Minus Mew.
Yep.
With a total of 33 hours and 46 minutes.
Not bad.
It's a lot better than I ever did.
Well, yeah, but you had to, like, trade with link cables and shit. So, and, yeah. It was a lot easier for him, I think. Had to go talk to that guy about Farfetch. So, since this is our standard of podcasts, we got to do our favorites and least favorites. So, we'll start with Pokemon. Doug. What was your favorite Pokemon in this series?
Man, there's just... So many. The Pokemon are presented exceptionally well in this. Also, they don't just say their names.
Yeah, I was just about to mention that.
Honestly, I have to go with Mewtwo. Not just because he doesn't preach, but because he was actually, like, very alien to look at and very threatening.
Yes, exactly.
Like, just his behavior, it represented the berserk monster that Mewtwo is supposed to be quite well.
Yeah, he looked like a level 80 Pokemon that could fuck shit up. Yeah. He didn't look like someone who wants to clone everyone to rule the world. He just wanted to be left alone. And kind of like Mewtwo Returns, in a way. On an island, by himself. Just wanted to be left alone.
A little more, except he doesn't, you know...
Speak English.
Yeah, he doesn't talk about his issues with life and where he came from. You just kind of rawr at you.
Yeah, rawr.
How about you?
My one was Charizard. I really liked the Charmander because it was really cute. And the one thing actually I forgot to mention that I really liked about this was when Charizard, Mega Charizard X was doing his slash attack on Mewtwo, Red could see inside him the Charmander that he picked doing the same moves. He could see where he had grown with this Pokemon. And you could actually feel the connection between the two, so I thought that was really cool. It was really hard to pick, though, because all the Pokemon were awesome in this movie, or in this series. So what was your least favorite Pokemon? I'm sure this was a hard choice. Mine's a vanity pick, so... Yeah.
I don't really have one. I have any written down. Okay. Yeah, I don't. Like I said, they were all so well presented.
Yes,
I really can't think of any that I didn't like.
Yeah, me too. That's why I went with the Twitch plays Pokemon response, and I said Kabutops because the one thing that I hate about this is that Red picked the wrong fossil. Praise Helix. So, what was your favorite scene?
Once again, this was a series. Yeah. There are a lot of really good scenes in this series. And honestly, I would watch a full... If they just did this as, like, a pilot and then start from the beginning again...
Yeah.
I would love to see an entire series made from just this.
I would watch Kanto, Johto. I would watch every generation of this.
But I think my favorite scenes are... The fight with Brock... I really liked, especially because Brock was essentially lecturing Red the entire time and giving him small hints of how to become a better trainer.
Yep.
The Giovanni fight.
Right.
Just because, well, I'm a big Giovanni fan, and that entire encounter was awesome.
It was.
Mewtwo fight.
Of course.
But in the end, I think my absolute favorite scene was when they revealed Gary as the actual champ.
Okay.
Right after he beat Lance, they opened those doors to the final room, and you don't see him right away, but you hear Gary's... Damn it! You hear Blue's theme... That's three for me.
Yep.
You hear Blue's theme playing in the background.
Yeah.
And you're just like, God damn it, where is he?
Yep.
Because that's always the theme that I play right before he showed up on screen in the Game Boy version.
Yep.
At your most weakest point, just to fuck you over.
That's another thing we haven't actually mentioned. The music in this is perfect. It fit. It's all from the games, just reorchestrated to be way more sweeping and dramatic, including like the Pokemon Center, the Lavender Tower,
the gym leaders,
the gym themes, the battle themes, like you mentioned, Blue's theme. It's all perfect. My favorite scene was the fight with Mewtwo. Because, yeah, like I said, I really like the connection between Red and Charizard, because it kind of reminds me of going through the games and with my starter and how I had that connection with my Pokemon, too. So what was your least favorite scene in this? Good luck.
My least favorite scene probably was back in the first episode when he tried to catch the Nidoran from the other trainer.
You wish he would actually knock the ball away?
Not even that. Just that the idea of thinking he could catch someone else's Pokemon, it just kind of like burns me a little. Like,
yeah, it's kind
of like how I can understand you're new at training.
Yeah.
But why would you think it's okay to take someone else's pet, essentially?
Yeah, the only time I ever accidentally threw a Pokeball at a trainer's Pokemon is when I forgot that I was fighting a trainer.
I've done that.
Yeah, so...
It was against Haunter in Lavender Tower, because, you know, Haunters are a rare spawn there.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I'm fighting a Haunter. I should try catching it. Oh, crap. It was a trainer.
Yeah. That's the one nice touch about the new games, is that if they're... Well, I guess it only counts if you've caught the Pokemon... There's a little Pokeball next to its name.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've caught the Pokemon, but it's trainer's Pokemon, that Pokeball's gone.
Hmm.
So.
And how about you? What part didn't you like about this series?
So, I like this series so much that my least favorite scene is a lack of something. It's the lack of Bill. I think Bill should have been here somewhere. It could have been a nice little scene where he was stuck in the Pokemon suit and went through the transporter.
I'd say in the games he was actually like the fly.
Yeah, exactly. In the Ash anime, he was stuck in a Kabuto costume.
Clearly, he picked the wrong one. It should have been an Omanyte costume.
Exactly.
But
oh man, that would have been really hard to get into.
Yeah, actually, I agree with you on that. That's a pretty big thing to be missing. Yeah. Even if he had just mentioned it in passing, like he did some of the other things.
Yeah, if I had one criticism, it would just be that. And I might have to watch it again, see if maybe it was like a subtle mention or something like that that I just missed. Or maybe it's in the Japanese version and they just cut it out somehow. So, what's your overall rating? From Pokeball to Master Ball, what would you give this?
Oh. I know I've already given one of these, but I have to do it again just because this is... I have to give it a Master Ball.
Yeah, there's no opposition there.
Like, no, this is serious. You?
Yeah, it's a Master Ball. It's missing one thing.
This is what a Pokemon anime should be.
Yes. I mean, I like the Ash storyline. It's really nice, and it's funny, and it's got a lot of heart to it. But if you want to base the anime off the games, this is how to do it. They did it right. In every sense of the word. They knew who they were targeting, and they honed in on them.
I kind of hope they do something like this as a promo for each new generation.
That would be awesome. And they moved it up to each thing. Like, the next one you have gold or silver. as the main protagonist, and you go through that whole arc.
That would be kind of awesome.
Yeah, and then you have May, or whoever the male character is. I never find out the names of the male characters, because I always play as them.
I think it's Brendan?
Brendan, yes, yes. Yeah. With his stupid white hat hair.
White beanie hat hair?
Yeah. And just keep going. That would be freaking awesome. They should have done that for Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. But no.
Well, they did kind of do that one Mega Evolution.
Yeah, actually, that should be another bonus episode. We should watch the Mega Evolution shorts, because I haven't actually seen them yet.
They're not that... They're like a few minutes. They're actually not
super... Well, then we have like a half-hour episode.
Okay.
But I want to see them either way, so... And that about does it for us. That's this bonus episode, so thank you for listening.
Hopefully whatever is keeping one of us away will be solved by next week.
Yes! Obviously we'll have you updated on our Twitter account, which is Gen Zero Podcast, or on Facebook, which is facebook.com/GenZeroPodcast. If you have any questions or comments, you want to say anything to us, you can hit us up at GenZeroPodcast@gmail.com. As always, that's GEN, the number zero, the word podcast, all together. And if you want to find us on the web, you can find us at GenZeroPodcast.com. See you next time.
Later.